This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. The Tuyang Initiative describes themselves as a community-led arts management company with a dream. Established in 2017, this Miri-based award-winning social enterprise is focused on Dayak cultural heritage and aims to generate meaningful livelihoods for cultural custodians and lead efforts in its continuity. So this is done by facilitating capacity building and participation into the creative and cultural industries through strategic industry partnerships. Founded by father-daughter team John Wan Usang and Juvita Watatan Wan, the team also want their culture and traditions to continue well into the future and to continue to thrive. So the team have been invited to perform at the World Music and Dance Festival in Japan in August 2024. They are currently raising funds to get there, and I'm going to find out all about this from Juvita, who joins me all the way from Miri today. Welcome, Juvita. How are you today?
Hi, Juliet. Thanks for having me. All good.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me today. So yes, you're no stranger to BFM, but I thought it would be nice to talk to you, especially since, you know, you're trying to raise funds for this really, really important trip. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But first, you know, for anyone who might not be familiar with the work that you do, can you share more? And I know it was a bit of a personal journey, right, that led you and your father to establish the Tuyang Initiative. Can you share some of those pivotal moments or realizations that actually inspired its creation?
Yeah, sure. For me personally, it started, I think, when my uncle passed away, my uncle being my father's younger brother. And I remembered him to be a person who showed us, meaning my siblings and I, the way around the longhouse and our village. You know, whenever we went back, back is about 4.5-hour drive outside of Miri. Mm-hmm. So he taught us everything from, you know, catching fish and shrimping, and to cooking some of the interesting animals he caught or hunted, or you know, taking us on walks and to harvest wild fruits or vegetables. You know, so when he passed away, and I went back, I was already working in KL at that time, and I went back to the village for his funeral. His wife asked me, you know, what was she going to do now that my uncle was gone, and implying that what can she do? She felt financially insecure, and I remember being taken aback by that question, because in my mind, you know, my uncle and his wife and the rest of our longhouse are made up of some of the most capable and special people I've ever met, you know, and they're not only capable in ensuring that they can take care of their families or the wider community of the land, they're also some of the most creative people through the cultural expressions. I remember, like, you know, when we were younger, we were always encouraged to dance during large get-togethers, or, you know, I'd watch my late grandmother make our saong or sun hat, you know, and she's just casually beading some really refined motifs. And, you know, that to me, that was the seed that got us exploring. And, you know, using my experience of, you know, having worked in corporate for over 10 years and also in the creative and cultural industry in KL, how can our Indigenous communities leverage off our own cultural heritage and for our own benefit, you know, meaning... Yeah. For our own livelihood, and simultaneously become champions of our own cultural continuity. So I suppose that question is now the cornerstone of what we do at Tuyang.
Mm-hmm. And in what ways would you say Tuyang actually goes beyond merely just preserving Sarawak's Indigenous communities' cultural heritage, right? And instead, you actively work to ensure, like you mentioned, lah, those sort of meaningful livelihoods for cultural custodians.
So I think for us, currently our focus is through the creative and cultural industry. I think it's just as a way in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I remember the numbers correctly, I think there's close to 300 different Indigenous communities throughout Borneo, yeah. You know, and I think there's over 20 in Sarawak, 30 in Sabah, and I think over 200 in Kalimantan. So our cultural heritage is so vibrant on this island, and it's made up of even more diverse cultural expressions, you know. So there's value creation that goes beyond the usual practice of it as part of the community, or doing it as a job, you know. So we hope it can provide our communities with a form of safety net, you know, be it through tools they can use to generate income or make a livelihood, or enabling cultural continuity. And at the end of the day, we hope it makes it meaningful, you know, ultimately mm-hmm. for them.
Okay. And I know you guys do a lot of workshops and activities, right? Can you tell us a little bit about some of those that Tuyang offers to reconnect Indigenous communities with their cultural roots? You know, how do you think these sorts of activities actually empower participants, both economically but also culturally?
Yeah. So I think there's two parts to this. One of the ways Tuyang generates income as a social enterprise is to design and or run hyper-localized programs for different partners. So partners being, you know, government agencies mm-hmm. or international organizations. And we do this with our rural communities. So this will enable the opportunities for how we see it enabling the opportunities for livelihood generation. And we either provide our custodians with, you know, tools to help them better their craft development process, for example, or help them explore opportunities of new performing arts pieces or service offerings, you know, and again, this is through the various cultural expressions or knowledge, unique things that are unique to the community. So it could be musical instruments, it could be sound poetry, for example. And the second part is that we organize classes or activities in order to learn our cultural expressions in urban centers. Mm. So this is where our Indigenous communities, especially the younger generation, who are now urban-based, a lot of them are urban-based, will get access to it as well. Mm. So for a lot of us who are urban-based, you know, moving to urban centers means a huge disconnect from learning from our own elders. And, you know, this these kind of skills or cultural expressions carry a lot of generational passed down knowledge, right? And be it from how to harvest or cultivate certain materials to songs that teach kids about how to maneuver the river, you know, it may not be the ideal scenario to learn in this kind of setting in a studio in Miri, for example, mm-hmm. Because learning directly from your elders make it more personal to you, but it's the best that we can do with our current circumstances.
Okay. And it's, I guess, ensuring that, you know, it's all not lost, right? I mean, that's, I guess, at the, like you said, the cornerstone of it, right? And, you know, I was reading some previous interviews that you've given, right? And you've spoken about kind of the challenges, right? So there's things like unemployment, illiteracy happening in the rural communities, right? In what ways would you say Tuyang actually addresses these sorts of systemic challenges faced by the communities, particularly those two things that I mentioned, so employment and cultural preservation?
So we feel that the way we approach this is based on enhancing or complementing the strengths of our cultural custodians, rather than you know, applying the city folks' lens of addressing our so-called unemployment and illiteracy, because these concepts are actually foreign to our communities until, you know, it has been introduced to us. And I say so-called because while, you know, our communities may seem like they don't fit the country's definition of employed and literate, our custodians and elders are actually very knowledgeable in a lot of ways, you know, from handling of farming on a natural schedule or the timing and harvesting of both, you know, farmed or jungle produce. You know, they also still have vivid memories and understanding of our own systems, our own value systems, and of a different time in how you know, we deal with community related issues. And, you know, I feel like a lot of our Indigenous systems and knowledge, if allowed to be looked at from what it is, rather than through the, I don't know, a Western lens, you know, which is, I suppose, what most of us can't help but look through these days, because it is the mainstream. We may be able to do better, not just for the rural communities, but even, you know, solving some environmental related challenges, you know. And, you know, if we treat our cultural custodians as subject matter experts or, you know, consultants to do better for our natural environment or farming practices, you know, rather than as people who need saving, they could be, you know, they could be involved as part of the solution for food security and forest management, for example. And that in itself could create plenty of opportunities for livelihood you know, even for meaningful livelihood for our communities, right?
Yeah.
So again, just enabling the use of their existing expertise rather than running programs that might cut against the grain, I think is something that we feel would work better.
Mm-hmm. It's so frustrating, isn't it? All of this knowledge has been there for generations, right? Millennia, and then, you know, some scientist comes, or like, I don't mean to diss scientists, but, you know, some outsider, quote unquote, comes, they name it, and, you know, it's all credited to them when, you know, that knowledge has been there. It's all, it's just maybe not in a book, but...
Absolutely. It's not packaged the way, you know, through the lenses that we're now looking at life, right, in general.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the indigenous communities, I mean, I'm sure you, of course, know this, they should be part of the solution to things like the climate crisis and, you know, sorting all these sorts of food security issues, everything that you're talking about, because, again, such a deep connection to the land, you know, and they basically know how to do it. Laugh only, people would listen, isn't it? Okay. Let's just go for a quick break, Jivita. When we come back, let's talk a little bit more about some of the ways that Tuyang actually works with the different communities and some of the key initiatives and programs that you guys run. I'm speaking today to Jivita Tatanwan. She's the co-founder of the Tuyang Initiative, and that's an organization devoted to the Dayak people's cultural continuity through the performing arts. We'll continue our discussion after one quick break. Keep it here on Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. On the line with me today, all the way from Miri, is Jivita Tatanwan. She is the co-founder of the Tuyang Initiative. Tuyang, which I think means friend, right? In the Kenyah language, right? Which is, of course, your language, is an organization devoted to the Dayak people's cultural continuity through the performing arts. They are a community-led arts management company with a dream, as you said. Yeah, so established in 2017, of course, and you guys have been doing wonderful work throughout all of these years. Maybe now, Jivita, we can talk a little bit about some of the key initiatives or the programs that you guys offer to support Indigenous artisans and all those cultural practitioners.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've kind of branched out outside of performing arts as well.
Okay.
So like right now, we are in the middle of running a five-year program for federal combined with a state government agency, where we bring in industry experts, particularly in two fields. One is in food and health, and the other one is in the creative and cultural industry.
Okay.
And our work is in doing our work with the cultural practitioners on the ground is in facilitating what we call the identification of the potential products and the larger impact it can have to the community through the delivery of said products.
Okay.
So at the end of the program, we're looking to have around 20 unique products and services delivered by our cultural practitioners from various locations and communities around Sarawak. Other than that, we also actively pitch for projects or clients that understand our work and the way we'd like to collaboratively work. So another component that's important to us is an opportunity to create the learning and growth process for our practitioners while on the job. So basically those who are willing to give us and our practitioners a chance to try. And we recently concluded an art curation and facilitation project for a new corporate office building here in Nyeri, in which we got to work and provide opportunities for over 40 artisans and contemporary artists from not just Sarawak, but also from Sabah and Orang Asli from West Malaysia. Mm-hmm. So, and it's one of the rare chances that we feel our arts practitioners get to focus on their craft with a decent amount of time and paid relatively well. So that's another initiative. And the third one, if I could just highlight, we're also looking to fill the gap of Indigenous arts managers or producers through another program we hope to run starting this year. There's not a lot of people, especially in West Malaysia or the global north, who can understand the nuances of being from this island, being Indigenous, and the unique challenges that we face, you know, and how that impacts the way we create as creative people. especially if we don't know how to advocate for our, don't know how to be advocates for our custodians, you know, be it from issues around unfair rates or unfair timelines, or, you know, being pushed to change our narratives or stories to suit others, you know, and that becomes then part of the larger problem. And we feel that that also inhibits the young people from our communities to see that there's an opportunity here. You know, it in the end, it might seem like it's pointless, and end up giving this up as a career. So we felt that there's already an initiative, I think, by our state ministry to grow the creative industry. Our ministry, I'm not sure if you're aware, changed its name from Ministry of Tourism, Arts and Culture to Ministry of Tourism, Creative Industry and Performing Arts.
Okay.
Just a couple of years ago. And we thought it's best that we start developing, you know, informed, experienced and responsible arts managers, producers, community managers, etc., to be the bridge, or better yet, be the champions of our cultural custodians. So yeah, those are just some of the initiatives that we're working on at the moment.
Okay. And you know, when you're doing all of this, right, how do you ensure that it's in a way that also respects both, you know, the cultural integrity and also the, I guess, craftsmanship of Indigenous artisans, you know, when you're focusing on the arts-related things?
I think how we do it is not, I don't think there's anything really special about how we're doing it. We spend a lot of time having conversations with our practitioners and our artisans. We really take the time to understand the challenges and limitations they're facing, you know, and we look at ways together in how we can develop something to help ease those challenges and those problems. So, and I think more importantly, it's about giving our cultural custodians the dignity and pride in delivering something based on their strengths. You know, it's a, to simplify, I suppose it's a very basic dynamic based on mutual respect. And that's how we've been operating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, okay. Simple, right? But I think very, very important as well, the mutual respect. And have you guys also faced any sort of challenges in terms of like any tension between, let's say, modernization and also the preservation of, you know, all these traditional cultural practices? Have you guys encountered that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's always pressure to so-called modernize, but I think for us at Tuya, we remember where we come from. You know, our team's made up of people, young people from various Indigenous communities. You know, Kenya is only one part of it. We have Malanau, we have Iban, we have Kayan, and remembering where we come from allows us to understand that you know, no matter how modern a world we live in, we know where we stand. And, you know, we are also aware of who we come from. That means our own ancestors, our own elders, and ultimately the land that we come from and where we are today from a situational aspect. So the circumstances that have led us down this path, you know, for example, moving out of our communities because of the pursuit of a so-called better life was encouraged. And, you know, yeah, there's too much details on going into why it was encouraged and who benefited from it. But in hindsight, I think most of us see clearer. And that provides us with a compass, I think, in our everyday decision-making. Mm. And, you know, as a community-led creative agency, I suppose, you know, based here in Miri, a city, we're constantly pushing ourselves in terms of innovation and striving to do better. And we recognize what boundaries can and should be pushed, which channels, I guess, or mediums are better used to tell our stories, and what work can be done purely for preservation purposes. So being very clear about those things allow us to, I suppose, move forward very confidently.
Okay. And, you know, in terms of success stories, I mean, any that you can share, you know, notable achievements of Tuyang, I guess, you know, maybe collaborations, performances, anything that you're particularly proud of that you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, I think the most recent project, which was the art curation and facilitation project, that took us, I think, about somewhere around 8 months to complete, is definitely one of our more recently notable ones. It was quite a challenge to organize for so many artisans and practitioners, as you can imagine, in different geographic locations, different kind of accessibility as well, and then helping our clients understand these challenges, rural logistics, certain choices of colors and things like that. At the end of the day, I think the feedback has been overwhelmingly positive from the clients and their staff, so we're quite pleased with that.
Okay. And I did want to ask you about something that happened in Singapore, right? There was a performance, I believe, at the Singapore International Arts Festival. I think that was quite a milestone for you guys as well, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. We had a collaborative work with the Singapore Chinese Orchestra. And it was for the opening show for SIFA in 2022.
Nice.
So it's quite special and it was a big deal for us. And I think what people don't realize is that for a minority culture such as ours, mostly because we are not mainstreamed, either in our own national narrative, what more globally, it means a lot for our communities that we are seen on these kind of stages, and that actually inspires our community members on all levels, and so we've been absolutely grateful to our partners who understand our aspirations and ultimately provide us with the platform and the chance to bring us into the fold and do things together.
Yeah. And not in a kind of like tokenistic manner, right? Which sometimes happens.
Yeah,
Yeah. This one is, yeah.
absolutely. And this work took like 2 years to actually plan and complete. So it was very comprehensive, and it was a very special experience for even our practitioners who were part of the process. Yeah.
Okay. And I think, again, it's important to reiterate that Tuyang is not an NGO, right? You do not accept donations. You are professionally run. But of course, I know it's micro, like a micro SME, right? It's really, really
Yeah.
tiny. And it's hard
Yeah.
to sustain yourself financially. But maybe you want to
Yeah.
just share how you do that in kind of pursuing this social mission, right? I mean, what sort of strategies have you guys found to be effective in achieving that kind of balance?
So, I mean, ultimately, our hope is that through the delivery of our products and services alone, we can financially carry ourselves through, be able to hire more people and train them from the community, run as many developmental programs, be it in enhancing skills or product development. But, as someone who's formerly worked in large corporate organizations, I'm aware why that is possible for them and not for micro ones like us, especially, if we do not have the kind of financial backing these corporations have to run, departments or outsource certain functions, research, product development, sales and marketing. So that's why for new products or product development or research, or any community development project ideas, we still actively seek for grants or pitch for funding to those who are willing to give it a try with us. We have been relatively successful in pitching certain programs to that can help provide alternative pathways to our communities. Yeah, I think as a bootstrapped micro enterprise, that's the best way for now. Well, at least hopefully until we can find an angel or an impact investor who's willing to explore this space with us.
Okay. I mean, because in the past, I mean, I was reading previous interviews, you have received some sort of financial support from bodies like MAJIC, Cendana, right? And I guess that's quite crucial as well to the funding of your operations.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I mentioned, it's for the developmental aspect of new products and services because, I think most people don't realize how hard it is to reach some of our rural communities,
Yeah.
and how much time it actually takes, and the coordination required because, mobile signal is not available all the time, for example, you know, or the off-road 4x4 experienced driver that you need to hire when you want to access specific areas, because our roads are not all roads, you know. So yeah. So imagine if you're trying to deliver certain kind of upskilling programs, or just meeting them to explore developing new products or services, it's really challenging, you know, and compounding all these factors, it takes a heavy toll cost-wise, mm-hmm. In terms of time and money for small businesses such as ours. So every time we have the opportunity for a grant that can allow us or enable us to spend time and visit different practitioners and look at the possibility of certain products and services, we want to work with those partners to make that happen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are there many challenges that you guys face in securing these sorts of funding for these sorts of activities?
Well, for programs that we have pitched so far, I would say it's a 50-50.
Okay.
I think it's this in the space of performing arts or in the creative and cultural industry sphere, it seems to be a little more challenging.
Mm.
But for more on the economic development or capacity building opportunities in other realms, that has been pretty okay for us, I suppose, okay. Right now. So we're trying to also help our funders understand that we cannot set creative and cultural industry aside, because that is part of who we are as people, and the opportunity in cultural heritage is so so big. And if we look at it as like, oh, performing arts alone, yeah, I don't know how I feel about that, is something that needs to change. And yeah. I think we're starting to see that shift in some of the agencies. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's promising. But there is currently, of course, you know, there is something big happening. You guys have been invited to the World Music and Dance Festival in Japan, right? You want to tell us a little bit first about, you know, that upcoming performance and I guess, you know, its significance, you know, for showcasing Dayak cultural expression on such a platform?
Yeah. So WMDF, or World Music and Dance Festival in Hokkaido, is arguably one of the biggest performing arts festival in Japan. They have mentioned that they apparently draw about 30,000 people annually. Mm. And this platform is actually giving us a chance to showcase a new body of work, in which for the first time, through one piece of work, we intend to highlight a theme and a storytelling element with different Dayak communities' expressions within it. And we have chosen Wind and Earth as the binding theme, and we will be showcasing the Iban community, the Lunbawang community, Kenya and Kayan practitioners, as well as their stories. And if people are wondering, like, you know, they've seen something where, you know, everybody is in there wearing their cultural costumes together, but it is not like what is being portrayed in, for example, our Hari Kebangsaan shows or Chitrawarna shows, where, you know, people are just thrown together in different cultural outfits and then they're just dancing and singing to a song. It will have a lot more depth because these are not casted, you know, musicians or dancers, mm. and these are real cultural custodians and practitioners from the communities they are from. So I think that is going to be what will hold it all together really, really strongly. And what we also love about this festival is that there's obviously the core part is the show, but there's also an opportunity to engage with the local community through the different workshops, and our practitioners will get to go to schools and old folks' homes and community spaces. Wow. To share their culture. Yeah,
yeah.
And it is a precious experience because for our culture custodians, can you imagine from being in an island in a rural area of Borneo to, you know, now sharing with this community from another island in Japan. And the opportunity for exchange and for them to come home and share their experience and inspire the next generation about where their cultural heritage can take them. I think it's very precious. Yeah.
Okay. sounds, you know, like an absolutely amazing opportunity. But of course, there is some obstacles that you guys are facing, right? There is some funding that is the issue, isn't it? For that trip, that actual trip to Japan, right? Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, what's happening there?
Yeah, I think for us in East Malaysia, mobility is particularly hard, yeah. You know, and we're talking about both like terrain and cost. So within Sarawak, particularly if you're coming from the rural areas, for us, we even have challenges pitching for jobs in KL, for example, and justifying mm-hmm. flying practitioners to KL simply because of how expensive it can get. So imagine multiplying that for an endeavor such as this, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we've tried pitching this as a corporate sponsorship, including to our state tourism board and our national airlines as an opportunity to kind of, you know, activate some on-ground branding opportunities to promote Sarawak in Malaysia, particularly, or, you know, and even back since last year, 2023, we've also written to our state ministry, national tourism board, cultural foundations, etc. So far it's either been lots of hoops or quiet. So that's why I think we're trying to, you know, this is our last resort in fundraising through a crowdfunding platform.
Okay.
And it is a bit of a stretch, but we said we're gonna, you know, go down fighting. So this is us giving it a go, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And how, so crowdfunding again, how can folks help? There's of course a platform that they can go to and all of that. Can you just share?
Yeah. So if you'd like to financially contribute, you can visit simplygiving.com /appeal/ Tuyang to Japan.
Okay.
And you can donate there or share the link from there. And if you're potentially an interested corporate sponsor, we have a support letter from the Ministry of Tourism, Arts and Culture, which is currently providing tax exemption incentives, either to the value in cash or in kind. So this is specifically for arts and culture programs with this letter issued by MOTAG. So you can reach out to us at hello@thetuyang.com for more info. Those are the two immediate ways.
Okay. And, you know, just for folks like me, just head to the Simply Giving website. I think if you just search for Tuyang, I'm quite sure you'll find it there, right? And you can just... I saw you guys are getting, you know, quite a lot of support. Everybody's really...
Rallying.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
Amazing.
Exactly.
It's amazing, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, hopefully more people do that. And I guess, you know, before I let you go, Jivita, just looking ahead, what are some of the other long-term goals for Tuyang, both in terms of expanding its reach, but also deepening its impact on Indigenous communities?
I suppose one of our long-term goals is perhaps to set up remote teams in multiple locations across Sarawak mm-hmm. and maybe even Sabah. Again, this is because of the sheer size of our territory and also the access to some of our communities are extremely challenging. And again, we want team members hopefully to be from the particular area so they can better contextualize the work and facilitate for us and with us better. And that way, I think we hope it can be more effective for both our teams and cultural custodians. And then for my own personal long-term goal for Tuyang, I think it's about passing the leadership baton to our team members, you know, who've been learning and growing with us for a few years now. I think it's been 7 years, you know, time flies. and I've kind of set it at a 10-year mark, you know, which is in 3 years' time. So let's see if we can make that a reality.
Okay. And in terms of, you know, adaptation and things like that, you know, I mean, of course, there is that evolving landscape, right, of cultural preservation and economic development, right? How do you plan to kind of adapt and also innovate to remain effective in achieving your objectives?
I think the way I see it is we will continuously explore collaborations and strategic partnerships mm-hmm. Particularly with industry, you know, because it's impossible for us to be the experts in everything other than the people that we work with and the facilitation process that we have figured out over the years. But more importantly, I think we definitely need more allies and partners who truly want to be part of the solution, I think. Yeah. And I suppose in taking our own lesson, we will be leveraging on the strength that we do have, you know, and which is to continue facilitating the connections and opportunities for our cultural custodians in the best ways we can, and be the voice from the ground where we can. Yeah.
Okay. Jivita, thank you so much for joining me today. Before I let you go, any other concluding message, anything that you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Okay, maybe I'll leave something that's not just specific for Tuyang, but I think also perhaps for any other East Malaysia-based companies or small businesses trying to get buy-ins or support from corporates and, you know, and understanding the challenges. For us, our hope as a company that offers products and services is that corporate Malaysia will probably, we hope that they start thinking about us in East Malaysia beyond the conventionally extractive way. You know, typically we're just looked at as a market to push products to, or maybe about getting stories, about producing emotional commercials that brands want to prove that they understand us, or maybe, you know, reducing our roles to just some kind of fixes on the ground. What I really hope is that more companies consider incorporating us in East Malaysia into the development and delivery of products and services that come back to us. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe also consider our version of our proposals, because it speaks to our needs, you know, or have us work in providing some form of products and services, something as simple as procuring premiums for, you know, internal or clients, or even roles to consult, because the ROI from a corporate perspective needs to be looked at differently. And that way, I think there's true participation for what is from East Malaysia into wider corporate Malaysia. I mean, that's how I see it could impact their DEI index. But it's also important to note that it's the right thing to do, right? Especially if you're trying to reach or address the East Malaysia audience. You know, it can't just be about formulating a marketing plan in offices in Klang Valley anymore. I think an important step is working with East Malaysian individuals or companies who can help corporate better understand our market. And hopefully that will translate to greater understanding of the true value of what we are actually capable of doing from here as well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Okay. All right.
Thank you so much for your time.
No, it was an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me today. I was speaking to Jivita Tatanwan, co-founder of the Tuyang Initiative. So again, I'm just going to read out some websites. So the website for Tuyang is thetuyang.com. That's your main website. But you guys are also on Facebook, Instagram and YouTube. And folks, if you'd like to help them get to Japan, and there is a deadline, right, for this fundraiser. Yeah, it's coming up very soon, I think. April, was it 8th or 9th?
Yeah, we're trying to stretch it a little bit more with a request to the festival. Okay. But we'll keep you posted. Yeah.
Okay. But just do it now, lah. Huh? Just don't wait anymore. Just go to Simply Giving and just search for Tuyang. I think if you search for Tuyang, you'll be able to find it there. But if you miss any part of our conversation, you can always search for the podcast at bfm.my/learn. You can also find it on the BFM app. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.